Hi, Andy.
Hi, Victoria.
Today, we are going to be speaking with a stem cell expert and researcher, Dr. Doris Taylor.
I've been looking forward to this one. You know, she is an expert in the field of regenerative medicine, which I have long seen as the future of medicine.
And I think it's fascinating because one of the things you are so well known for is talking about the innate capacity of the body to heal. And it might be that stem cells are a very important underlying mechanism for that.
I think it is probably the mechanism. And I can't wait to hear what she has to say.
Fabulous. Let's get her on. Dr. Doris Taylor bioengineered the first beating human heart and is considered a global thought leader in regenerative medicine. She transformed the field of organ transplantation in 2008 by developing a method that makes scaffolds for organs. This achievement was recognized as one of the top 10 research advances by the American Heart Association, and Doris was nominated as one of the 100 most influential people in the world by Time Magazine. Her motto is build the future today and do it with heart. So welcome, Doris, for a conversation about stem cells.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here.
We're delighted you're here. And I thought we would begin by asking you to define stem cells and regenerative medicine, because there is a lot of misconceptions about both.
Sure. Let me start with the fact that stem cells are simply cells that can do two things. They can make more of themselves, self-renew, and they also can differentiate, become different kinds of cells. Virtually every organ or tissue in our body has stem cells. Stem cells are really nature's tool for what I call endogenous repair, self-repair. So regenerative medicine is the idea that we can treat an underlying injury rather than the symptoms of that injury, that we can actually get to the root cause, fix that, and restore the body's capacity for endogenous or self-repair.
If stem cells are everywhere, if they're in all tissues, why doesn't self-repair happen more often?
Perfect question. I would argue that for a lot of our lives, it does. Mm-hmm. If you think about it, when you fall down and you scrape your knee, this is a classic example I use. Fall down, you scrape your knee, turns red, and then that is inflammation. Inflammation is nature's cue that says, help, I've got an injury, send me cells. And the cells move in. So if you're 2 years old, those cells move in, your knee scabs, it gets well, and you don't have a scar for the rest of your life. If you're 62 or 72, fall down, scrape your knee, same redness, same scar, same, quote, repair, except now you're probably going to have a scar. Why? Because as we age, and based on the number of hits we take, the number of stem cells we have go down and the potency of the cells we have go down. So it's actually this balance. And part of regenerative medicine's goal is to restore those cells and the potency of those cells. And I think of it in the context of heart disease, but it applies to everything.
I've always seen that as the future of medicine. But let me ask you, what happens in the heart? Why, when a portion of heart muscle dies, does regeneration tend not to happen?
Again, great question. Two reasons. One, the time that regenerative medicine intrinsic endogenous repair fails is either when you don't have enough cells or you don't have enough time. Mm-hmm. In the case of the heart, and I would argue the brain, both are true. Mm-hmm. When you have an injury to the heart, a heart attack, for example, first of all, the blood vessel gets clogged. And what happens is everything downstream that doesn't get oxygen actually can die if it's not fed for a period of time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there is an inflammatory response, but there's no real capacity for cells to get to that region to actually mediate the repair. That's part of it because the vessels are clogged. Number two, in our heart and in our brain, we have fewer stem cells than in virtually any other organ or tissue. And my worldview is because those are the two organs that are geometrically constrained. The shape of the heart is exquisitely designed to pump. And if we had too many cells, or cells could overgrow, then it couldn't pump in the correct way, and that's not compatible with life. Same thing in the brain. It's a geometrically constrained organ. If you have too many cells, you get growth that is incompatible with life.
Too bad. That seems like a design flaw.
Yeah, and when I listen to Doris, I hear you talking about the innate healing properties of the human organism. Can you say more about that?
I've always said I think that's the most interesting aspect of our biology is that there
Yeah.
is this intrinsic capacity for repair, for regeneration, for adaptation to injury and loss. And I think I've always seen my mission is as trying to build more confidence in people about that. Most patients that I work with really don't realize this great resource that they have within them.
So I think of stem cells as pluripotential. You're sort of talking about organ-specific stem cells. To what extent do we have pluripotential that can move to the area of injury and address the limited space in the brain or the heart?
Think about it. If we actually think back to the history of medicine, we have been doing stem cell transplants since the 50s. When we did the first bone marrow transplant, we just didn't realize at the time that the bone marrow had, quote, stem cells in it because we didn't have a definition for those cells. We thought we were just repopulating white blood cells in the blood system. We didn't realize there were cells in our bone marrow, our blood, that actually have the capacity to be trafficked to these sites of injury to mediate repair. So we do have immature cells in our body that are stem cells that are capable of repairing multiple tissues. However, if we're being really clear, for the most part, we don't have many pluripotent stem cells that can give rise to all types of tissue. They typically get restricted. We have mesodermal, endodermal. We have cells that are actually tissue system specific. But the cool thing is that our bone marrow and blood do contain immature cells that, when they go to a specific organ, get the right cues. What does a stem cell do? The whole definition of a stem cell is that it responds to its environment and becomes like the cells around it. And one of the flaws in stem cell therapy, in my worldview, has been that we take these healthy cells and we put them in this hostile, inflamed environment, and we say, oh, become healthy, normal heart. Or become healthy, normal brain, or become healthy, normal liver. And it's like we're putting them in an environment with no food, clothing, or shelter and saying, thrive, and do the right thing. They don't. And in fact, some of the data from the 90s showed that when immature cells, bone marrow-derived stem cells, were put in the hearts in preclinical studies, so in animal studies originally, those cells in the middle of the scar turned into cartilage and bone and fat. And people were like, why is that? I'm like, duh, location, location, location. I wrote a paper called the Real Estate Approach to Stem Cell Therapy. So part of what I believe is that it's not just about getting the right cells there, it's about also recreating the appropriate environment.
My impression is that we may be close to being able to regenerate severed spinal cords and islet cells in the pancreas, but it seems to me the most urgent priorities are brain and heart. And how realistic is that goal?
So it's absolutely realistic, but and we can get into this in depth if we want, but I'm going to just, everyone who knows me knows I just call it like I see it. So I'm just going to call it like I see it. I absolutely think it's physiologically possible and doable. And if you think about a heart attack is when a blood vessel in the heart gets clogged. A stroke is essentially a heart attack in the brain. At least one type of stroke is. Is that realistic? Yes. However, why? So the first stem cell therapy was done in the heart in 2000. Why don't we have an approved therapy now? Because it's about choosing the right cell at the right time for the right patient and getting it there. And the clinical trials that were done weren't designed to answer those questions. My personal belief is that the system to do clinical trials is somewhat broken. But I actually want to make another point. Can we do it? Yes. Will it take stopping and rethinking the right trials? Absolutely. And it's going to take people who've been in this field for a long time to say, you know, it hasn't failed. We just haven't done it right. So let us do it right. Let us own that we didn't do it right. And let's design the right trials now and actually show that it works.
I want to go back to a place where stem cells has been FDA approved and very successful. And you brought it up already. We have done bone marrow transplants, for example, for people with leukemia since the 1950s. And while it's a very hard therapy to go through, it's often life-saving and puts the cancer into remission. In that particular situation, it is not the person's own stem cells, it's a donor. And I just want to understand, based on what you're saying, what can we learn that made that particular use of stem cells effective, part of standard of care for certain kinds of cancers? What's different about that than treating a heart or the brain?
First of all, if you think about bone marrow transplant, it's, as you said, it's a very difficult procedure. And one of the things you have to do is essentially wipe out everything that's already there. All of our long bones and our sternum are designed to be a reservoir for stem cells. Our body knows how for bone marrow and other cells, and our body knows how to grow the cells in that environment, right? So when a stem cell transplant is done there, it doesn't always work, doesn't always engraft, but if it engrafts, actually the few cells that go in start repopulating. And one of the things about stem cells that is unique is they can regrow a lot more times than other cells that are already more differentiated. So they can just continue to proliferate. And they actually refill the whole bone marrow reservoir throughout your body. But that takes months and months and months. The only thing you can't change about any of this regenerative medicine or anything is the time frame of biology. I wish we could speed it up, but cells grow how they grow, and you don't want them growing faster because that's what happens with cancer cells. So why has that worked in putting cells in the heart or brain or liver or kidney or whatever has
Or
not?
knee or hip.
Anywhere. And actually, some people would argue those have worked. But again, it's getting the right cell in the right place at the right time. And we've had 50 years of figuring out that in bone marrow transplant. I guarantee you the first X number didn't work, like anything. That said, in an organ like the heart or the brain, if you, the potential to get it wrong is dangerous, right? So you hope that worst case you do nothing, best case you do something positive. What you can't afford to do is something negative, right? So the trials that have happened in heart and brain are actually more constrained than those that are done in other areas. The number of cells you can give, the location of where you can give those cells, how you can get them there, those are actually very particular in the heart and brain, and actually have not probably been evaluated to the degree that they need to be. But let me back up. There's one point that I do want to make, and it's not a popular phrase today, but stem cells differ in men and women. And they differ in men and women in part, I believe, because the cells in our bone marrow and blood are the cells that also make up our immune system, right? That inflammation. And the one thing stem cells do better than anything is turn off inflammation. That's their best effect. When you get an injury, you get acute inflammation. That acute inflammation is nature's cue to say, help, send me cells. And if you get the right cells there, you turn off that inflammation and it goes down and your body repairs itself. If you don't get the right cells there and you don't turn off that inflammation, that's when your body ramps up the inflammatory response and said, hey, I said, send me cells. And then you start getting pro-inflammatory cells there and other deleterious cells that can actually mediate injury rather than repair. Okay? So that's number one. I want to go back to men and women. And where I said I think clinical trials are being done wrong. Most of the heart cell clinical trials recruited on average 17% women, even though women are at least 50% of the population. So they weren't powered to evaluate the effect in women, okay? And by that, I mean there weren't enough women enrolled to do the statistics properly, okay, to say this has the same effect in women as it does in men if we separate that. However, there have been a lot of trials done, and the data for women were not reported separately than men, even as supplemental analyses in the papers, okay? There was what's called statistically an adjustment for someone being a woman. Well, I went back and I said, okay, if we really believe stem cells are different in men and women, let's get access to all the data where we know women receive cells and men receive cells. And let's look at the women at the beginning of the trial, the men at the beginning of the trial, and at the end of the trial. Well, we found two things that are really important. One, men and women were different at the beginning of the trial. Women had a higher ability of the heart to squeeze, called ejection fraction, the amount of blood that gets squeezed out of the heart. One of the endpoints for all of these trials was ejection fraction. So women had higher, men had lower. Mix those together, you get so much noise that you're not going to see an effect. Number two, at the end of the trial, when we went back and looked differently, the overall trials were negative. In women, bone marrow mononuclear cells decreased stroke, decreased recurrent MI, decreased mortality. So here's a therapy where the trials are negative, but because we didn't look by sex, women are not getting a therapy that could save their lives. And more
Interesting.
women die of heart disease than men. When we looked at cells in men and women had more reparative cells. Men had more pro-inflammatory cells.
Why then do women get more autoimmune diseases than men?
I would argue it's because the balance of the immune system to allow pregnancy doesn't actually fight off foreigners. It fights chimeric things that include self.
Where do we get stem cells for this kind of therapy? And is there value in harvesting umbilical cord blood and banking it?
I'm a believer in banking, and the reason I'm a believer in banking is because if you need those cells, they're good cells, but you have to bank with someone who knows what they're doing and has demonstrated that they can keep those cells for a long period of time because you have to use a good bank. And also, there are public cord blood banks. Cord blood is actually a great substitute for bone marrow if a bone marrow donor cannot be found, and that is often true for people of color or people of different to match backgrounds. Cord blood doesn't have to be as well matched as bone marrow. So I'm a strong believer in it. If you need it, you want it. God willing, you'll never need it. That said, find a reputable bank or give it to a public bank that's doing this and making it available to everybody if you're not going to save your own. Where do cells come from? You can get your own cells harvested from bone marrow, blood, fat, muscle, almost anything you can get access to, you can get cells harvested from. The typical cell therapy that happens if it's your own cells these days, if it's done in a clinical trial, is fat or bone marrow. If it's done at a clinic, it's usually fat. I want to say in the US right now, there are over 5,000 unregistered illegal stem cell clinics. And some are doing good things, some are not. I'm a strong believer in educating people. So, one of the things I've done is create a list of questions that I want to know the answers to before I would get cells or let someone I love get cells. Happy to share that with you all for you to look at, edit,
Let
post,
me ask
whatever.
you a question that comes up a lot. I often get asked by people who have an arthritic knee or hip. They don't want to have a hip replacement or a partial knee replacement. And so they find out that they could have stem cell. And they love that option because it seems so much less invasive. It's usually not covered by insurance and is pricey. And what do you tell people like that? Do you say, absolutely, just ask these questions? Or do you say, this is still an area of active research? What's your response?
My response is if you go to the FDA website, at least previously, it said, don't do it. This is not approved. What I would say is if you're going to do it, ask these questions, get comfortable with the answers to these questions, go to reputable sources, not people who are just sharing testimonials, people who are willing to share data with you. And then there are some therapies where the devices to make the cells have been vetted and approved by the FDA. Those kinds of situations where either the laboratory has been approved by the FDA or the device that's actually isolating the cells has been approved by the FDA, that increases my confidence. But your average provider, I'll use that term, on the street I encourage you to ask questions, ask questions, ask questions. That said, does it work? The reality is, they are beneficial. They do change the inflammatory cascade. And part of what I think we need to do in this country is create a registry, enable these people who are doing all these treatments to actually supply data, require that people do follow-up. One of the catches is people come into a clinic, you go in, you get your knee treated, you go away. No one ever knows if it worked or didn't work. And if it did, and you happen to be the one person who it did, you then become the spokesperson for that clinic, right? So we need data.
So in the US, that's usually an autologous stem cell transplant, meaning it's probably coming from bone marrow or fat.
Actually, what happens for joint most often is you go in, somebody draws your blood, they either make platelet-rich plasma or they isolate some of the white blood cells along with the platelets and plasma and get rid of some of the cells and then put that back in your body. And the things I say to people is, okay, if you're taking my blood and you're going in the other room, I want to know what you're doing in that other room. I want to know it's sterile. I want to know you've, how many times have you done this? Have you done this in 100 people or have you done this in 100,000 people? And do you follow up and can I see the documentation? Ask the questions and then, you know, who am I to judge that for other people, except that if it were me or my family, what I say is, let's get informed. You know, elite athletes have been doing this for 30 years. People have been going out of the country to get it done for decades. Now, some of those places have good records, some don't. And the only way you're going to know is ask. I don't know if people have seen this, but there's a podcast called The Bad Batch. And I was in Texas when that whole fiasco happened because Texas became a right to try state where if you had a chronic illness and a doctor would prescribe it, you could go to anybody and get stem cells. And a chiropractor delivered stem cells to a number of people. However, those cells were contaminated with bacteria, and the majority of those people who were seeking therapy for serious diseases ended up in the ICU very, very sick from a bad batch.
Let me ask you, given the effect of stem cells on inflammation, do you see a role for stem cell therapy in autoimmune conditions?
Absolutely. And cell therapy is actually beginning to be approved for autoimmune conditions. Absolutely, I do. I mentioned cells are different in men and women. What we've shown is that the incidence of heart disease in men and women actually parallels the loss of certain stem cells. You can draw the inverse curve. We've done that. The data are pretty beautiful. And we also showed that in women with heart disease, they have a different TH1, TH2 balance than men, so they develop a different kind of heart disease. And women who have the same inflammatory profile as men actually develop the same heart disease as men. So it's absolutely related. I think we'll see approval for cells for the use in autoimmune diseases. Graft versus host disease, one of the first conditions where somebody who gets a bone marrow transplant and that bone marrow reacts with their body and causes a massive immune response. There are certain cells that will mitigate that whole body inflammatory response. So, yes, absolutely.
So autoimmune disease, would that be similar then to someone who has a cancer where you really don't want to use their own cells?
So let me back up and say cells are being used. If you think about it, CAR T therapies have been developed in the last couple of years. And CAR T therapies are basically a cell therapy for people with cancer. And the approval of this T cell therapy, where The receptor on the surface of the T cell has been modified using some genes. Then growing those cells to fight the cancer has been the biggest breakthrough in the potential for approving stem cell therapy. And those are self-derived typically. Okay, so CAR T therapies, even though the cells are modified, they come from the patient. I think most of the people out there who are getting non-umbilical cord blood cells are getting their own fat-derived cells. There's a difference, though, in getting fat-derived cells that are grown and stored and the cells that come from your fat and are given back to you within a few hours. And there's a very big difference in the potency of those cells. I have my own beliefs about which one is best.
So, give us a summation. We are in this world of FDA approval in one area, rapid development in some other areas like autoimmunity, question marks in the heart and the brain because there's still so much that we don't know in terms of the timing and the number of cells. Give us a summation. Where are we in the US at this point, and where might we be in 10 years?
So, cell and gene therapy, regenerative medicine is happening. The question is not if, it's when it will all be approved. And I think, in summary, I would say the unmet need is great. People don't have good alternatives, and so they're seeking these regenerative therapies, and that's why there are 5,500 stem cell clinics in the US right now. But the thing to remember about cell and gene therapy and other regenerative medicine strategies, unlike anything else like a drug, is once you get it, it doesn't just go away in 24 hours, and we can't take it back. So it has to be as pristine as possible. So, in summary, I would say the path for approval is clinical trials. Clinical trials are happening very slowly. They're expensive. We haven't redesigned them. We're not letting people have access to a therapy if the trial is positive. There are a lot of things that need to change there. And until they do, people are going to seek these therapies elsewhere. And
So
then
we would
finally,
love to have your list of questions if you would share that with us,
Awesome.
so that
Happy to
we could
share.
share that with patients.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on,
Thank you.
Body of Wonder, for sharing your knowledge in this rapidly evolving area of medicine that obviously has tremendous potential and also potential risk. Thank you. Thank you so
Great.
much for sharing
Wonderful.
your
Thank
expertise
you.
with
What a
us.
great conversation. Thank you both.